I'm Paul Lancour with podtech.net.
The IT organization is still viewed as an expensive budget item, and therefore they still need to become not only more effective, but actually much more efficient.
That's Frederick Verone, Managing Director at Bearing Point. And he says one of the ways to become more effective and efficient is to go offshore with certain aspects of the IT organization. I started our conversation by asking Frederick, since certain functions, such as the help desk, have gone offshore for some time, what's different today?
IT organizations are considering offshoring a number of other functions beyond the help desk. We'll talk about what those functions are. They tend to be part of what we refer to as the engine of the IT organization. Think about it around engineering, integration, some aspects of operations, and project management, really beyond the help desk, which, by the way, was the tier one level support that we're talking about. So it's much more intrusive than it was before.
Well, what's going on within organizations and in the marketplace that is creating an atmosphere where a lot of IT organizations are going offshore more and more?
Obviously, cost pressures are still here. They're still with us. A number of industries are doing better, some others are retracting. But overall, the IT organization is still viewed as an expensive budget item. And therefore, they still need to become not only more effective, but actually much more efficient. So the cost pressure is still the main driver for this to happen. In addition to that, a number of organizations are truly global, and they're realizing that they have pockets of knowledge around the world that can be leveraged much better across the entire organization. So you may have areas, for instance, in different parts of the world that are not being utilized across the entire organization, and today those IT organizations are starting to realize this and leverage those areas. Examples of this, a large global organization that I know of has a very large technology group in Malaysia. This technology group was set to do pure support, a little bit like the help desk we talked about before. And then they started to realize that those people have very technical skills, very good technical skills, and therefore can be leveraged for a number of other functions. They've started to use them in an engineering capacity, planning capacity, and even project management capacity. All of this from an Asian region. Another example is an investment bank that I know of has a very large and very good DBA group, database administrator group, in Ireland, and they decided to use it across the board so that this group can be leveraged for multiple areas of the organization. Just to mention two examples. So I think the first main reason for starting to offshore IT infrastructure areas is the cost, obviously, but also in some cases they realize how good some of these people are and they want to leverage them so that they become a bit more global. There is also another driver that comes to play. A lot of organizations are offshoring a number of functions, typically supportive functions. In some areas, actually, operational functions. It's the notion of the BPO, the business process offshoring. And they apply the same notion, the same BPO notion, to the IT infrastructure as they realize that similar benefit can be driven from there.
Maybe now would be a good time to clarify something, and that's to differentiate offshoring from outsourcing. What is the difference?
It's a very good question. Obviously, offshoring can be done two ways mainly. One is an organization uses its own captive site that they have in an offshore location, or leverage an offshoring service firm. And if it is using the captive site, obviously it's not outsourcing. A typical outsourcing construct is about taking a function, an entire function, and moving it out of the organization, leveraging the outsourcer to service the organization. It has a tendency to be more bulky than just looking at a task or a series of tasks. So offshoring tends to be more task-oriented or process-oriented and looks more like an out-tasking arrangement if you're using an outsider firm. If you're using your own captive site, obviously this is not really comparable. So the offshoring aspect, if you use an external firm, is much more granular and requires a much more detailed assessment activity to actually implement successfully. The outsourcing approach usually refers to moving to the outside organization in the technology world, an entire piece, for instance, the network or data centers or and its operations. While here we're talking about some very specific areas of processes or functions.
So if my organization is looking to take some of its IT infrastructure offshore, is there a reason that I should do it now? Or more precisely, is there something I lose if I don't jump on this at this time?
It's the usual question technologists ask themselves when a major change has to happen. Usually that major change comes with major investment as well, and the return investment is a key driver for such decisions. First, why now? First, what I want to say is that a lot of offshoring firms are expanding their capabilities, and historically they've been focusing on application development, application maintenance, some support, either application-specific or getting into more technical and the other areas, such as the help desk we talked about. This has been their typical business. More and more, they're looking at adding to this, either to take market share amongst themselves or to just get access to a larger market. And what we're seeing now is those offshoring firms are developing infrastructure, between quotes, capabilities, adding to their typical coders and testers a number of other folks that have very deep knowledge of technology processes, very strong knowledge of infrastructure technologies in terms of networks and systems and storage, etc. So for them, it's a way to, frankly, grow their revenue. For us using those firms, we're accessing now new capabilities that we were not accessing before. So I think the why now is also noting the fact that those offshoring firms are much more ready than they were before. Another factor that I think plays a key role here is a number of organizations have standardized or are standardizing their processes, their technology processes. Infrastructure is a complex environment. A number of processes are necessary to run it and operate it correctly. If you were to compare it with the software world, think about the CMM maturity model. Very similar. This is a model that has been used for many years in the infrastructure space. While a number of these models have been known and have been developed over the years, they've not been adopted on a regular basis. I'm thinking, for instance, about ITIL. This is a model that came from Europe and now is being used pretty much around the world. And it's a very good, solid model that can help organizations first better understand what processes are necessary to run infrastructure, second, standardize around those processes, and third, document them. And frankly, we'll talk about this a bit later during this conversation, but you'll see that this is a critical success factor, is to understand those processes, be able to standardize around them, and document them so that an offshore group can actually operate them, if you will. So this is now becoming possible. A third point, I think, is that there is also a number of technologies that have been around for many years, but it is becoming more and more pervasive in the technology space, around automation. There has been tools for many years, but there are more and more tools today that are policy-based that allow to have a better automation of those processes, and it, more importantly, I think, a better integration of those processes and a better alignment of these processes with the business. Having a policy-based automation capability allows you to better align those processes with the business and turn the dial, if you will, depending on how the business is doing and what is becoming more or less important. These tools allow organizations to automate a number of their activities and therefore making the offshoring of those much easier. So this is kind of the third point that I wanted to mention. And the last point, I think, goes back to your second part of the question, which is, if you don't do it now, you're not going to gain productivity later. So it's a question of the later you start, the later you will see return. A number of organizations have decided to go into the offshore type of business, if you will, so that they could actually reap the benefits from this change in the years to come. They've realized that the first year, maybe 2 years, the return is not there, but very quickly the return will come. And it will be quite major. With the same idea in mind, if you look at IT infrastructure, a number of organizations have looked at outsourcing, which is not an easy thing to do, and we talked about this before. They're starting to look at offshoring parts of it so that they can actually see some value, and they also understand that they won't see the value right away. So they want to start it now so that they can see the value in 2008, 2009, and so forth.
So what are some of the challenges an organization would face when looking to offshore some of its IT infrastructure?
I think the primary challenge is readiness of the IT organization. Very similar to the outsourcing or any type of large transformation, the IT organization needs to be ready for it. There is very little benefit to offshore any part of the organization that is not well understood and somewhat optimized, and hoping that the offshore service provider or the captive site of the enterprise will be able to not only take on the increased volume of activities, but also optimize this activity. So one of the key recommendations that we make to our clients is to make sure that they do some type of optimization before they turn this over to either the captive site or their offshore partners. You've got to do that optimization so that you frankly don't throw the mess over the fence. You give them something that they can manage and that they can be successful at. So that's, I think, one of the first challenges. This is something that is not very well understood, typically. The other, I think, challenge is the offshoring vendors themselves and the captive sites. Typically, they've not been doing this for very long. The captive site of an organization may not have done that at all, and therefore there is a learning curve that needs to be taken into account. This learning curve is not a showstopper, but requires the organizations involved in this exercise to have realistic goals and plan according to those goals. You can leverage an offshoring vendor because they know how to do offshoring and they know how to work overseas. They are now going to apply those methodologies and those practices to something that is slightly different. So there's still some learning aspect to this, but they'll be better equipped. If you use your own captive site, just make sure that you leverage lessons learned in other areas so that you don't fall into the same pitfalls and errors that you have seen earlier in the process. So there is a whole aspect of this that requires some homework to be done to make sure that whatever organization offshore is going to now support these processes is ready for those processes. It could be technical training, but it's also culture change and the way to work together that needs to be looked at. Also, I want to mention a third challenge, which is that there are areas of the world that are very well known for offshoring services. Obviously, India, for instance, some parts of Asia. In some cases, especially for European countries, you see North Africa or Eastern Europe as being areas that typical offshore outfits are set up. In Latin America, you have some of that. Asking these different companies to provide you with support in a new area like IT infrastructure is adding opportunities for them, but it's also adding additional requirements for them to hire people. And we know that in some areas of these countries, we know how difficult it is to hire the best people and retain the best people. So sending them over additional work, additional requests, especially around the IT infrastructure, which is somewhat new, is going to require them to hire new people. And therefore, when an organization does that, the organization needs to really understand where the offshore site needs to be. And there are areas in India, not to mention them specifically, that are under very high demand. And you may not want to be settling your offshore site in those areas. It has nothing to do with the infrastructure or anything else. It's just that this is a high-demand market. So you may want to make sure that you're going to be successful, pick those areas that are the best for you to be successful, where the talent pool is there and that you can access it. Those are the three main challenges that we've seen. So again, just to summarize, is the readiness of the IT organization itself to send over some tasks and processes to another organization or another part of the organization. So that needs to be standardized, documented, and somewhat optimized. The readiness of the other organization to take on that piece of work and make sure that you understand where you're sending that to so that you can actually reap the benefit from it without too much stress in terms of getting the right people to do it.
So that's a very clear outline of some of the challenges, specifically those three areas that you've just outlined for us. How would you overcome some of these challenges? Specifically, I would think that a lot of your processes in your organization are a little bit diffuse and you would want to maybe standardize some of that in order to be able to efficiently offshore it. As you said, some of these offshore vendors are exactly that, offshore. So how do you make sure that someone that distant is actually in step with you? And then internally, what would you do with your organization to make – this is a huge change for a lot of people. So how can you make sure that people are prepared for this kind of a transformation?
So one of the points that you mentioned here is the standardization. The organization that we work with that are offshoring the IT infrastructure tend to have a number of processes that are different from one group to another. They tend to have a central IT organization that focuses on technology, such as data centers, networks, etc. They also have CIO groups in the business units, if you will, that tend to focus on the application development and maintenance. All of it is a number of organizations looking at technologies different ways. And within those organizations, they have different approaches to a number of things. For instance, I'm just going to mention a couple of processes. Server provisioning is something that is done differently from one organization to another. Change management is another one. Configuration management. So they all have slightly different processes. Another one that's important is actually capacity management, for instance. It doesn't mean that an organization needs to standardize 100% on a given process. But what it means, though, is that the organization understands the process itself, can document the fundamental process, and can document the exception to that process. The goal is for them to document this process so that they can decompose the process and understand which part of that process can be taken over by an offshore organization, inside the organization or outside, and then understand the handoffs. And that's the most important part, is the understanding of the handoffs. So it doesn't mean that all the processes have to be standardized and standardized on only one single process across the enterprise. But the more they understand the process, the more they standardize. Actually, when you think about it, the handoffs, the better it is. The easier it's going to be for them to offshore pieces of it. So that's one aspect. That's usually kind of a bottom-up approach. Requires a lot of work to actually work on those processes if this is not something the organization has started already. And the point I was making a bit earlier in our discussion today is that a number of organizations have started this already a couple of years ago, so they should be in good shape to do this. The second aspect of the discussion here is how to work with the offshore vendor to help them connect with the organization. There is a number of programs that exist nowadays, actually, to estimate the level of readiness of an offshore vendor in different areas, or actually an outsourcer in different areas. And those maturity model could be applied to this area as well, to IT infrastructure. So working with the vendors, understanding your maturity level, understanding their maturity level, and very early in the process, understanding where the gaps are, and agreeing to work together on those gaps, is going to make this relationship work and is going to make the offshoring of the IT infrastructure services or processes that are in the scope work much better. And then finally, I think a point that you just brought up in the question was around the transformation aspect. It is a major transformation of the IT organization to do this. It is not just job elimination, job movement, and so forth, but it is really looking at the process itself and re-decomposing it, breaking it down in smaller pieces, and then reassigning responsibilities across the board. So I think it is very important that people understand what is being done. Therefore, the importance of the transformational angle to this. People need to understand what's in it for them. It's a large part of the success is that ability to communicate the positive aspect of this transformation. A lot of my colleagues and a lot of clients and other folks that are doing this are frankly concerned about people that may lose their job. Like if we take an engineer, for instance, systems engineer, if the system engineering function is now being performed offshore, the system engineer here does not have that role to perform. There are other roles in the organizations that are quite important that this engineer can be freed up to do. Typically what we see is a movement from the engineering function to the architecting function, which is an earlier piece of work that needs to be done that requires the person to actually connect the technical aspects of the system, if you will, to the business requirements. And there is, therefore, moving up the food chain, if you will, aspect of this transformation that is very appealing to the resources that we have here doing the more mundane type of activities today. Okay, a number of folks will have less of an operational job but have more of a thinking job, which is not a bad thing for them. But this needs to be articulated, and unless it is, the transformation has a good risk to fail in some capacity.
So what are some of the typical pitfalls that organizations should be wary of when looking to offshore some of its IT infrastructure?
Well, I think one of the things that IT organizations are starting to be looking at when they're starting to think about this is, one is that in some areas, the labor arbitrage, which is really driving this exercise for cost reduction purposes, that gap is going to close. Is it going to be in the next year or 2 years, or next 10 years? We don't know, but it's going to be closed. So one of the driver, which is cost today, needs to be taken into account amongst other drivers and within a given context. And therefore, the decision as to what to offshore or not needs to also take that into account. Offshoring tasks that can be automated or further standardized and therefore can be much more efficient should also be a key priority. Okay, so it's not just looking at labor arbitrage, but it's looking at what is the potential that we have to make this particular process much more productive and much more efficient. The other thing is the organization doing this should be really looking at, especially if they want to leverage the captive sites or the different areas in the world, the different groups, should really be making decisions based on how that particular group or that particular service provider is good at doing what they're being asked to do. So it's kind of, at this point, still looking at the best of breed type of approach. Obviously, the geographies need to be taken into account. There are things that you cannot do if you don't have physical connection, if you will, and therefore that cannot be looked at as a potential alternative. But you need to really leverage your centers of excellence, if you will, or if there is a group that's not a center of excellence yet, to make it such across the board. And then finally, I think probably the overall recommendation is put yourself in a situation where you can trust but verify. Here, it's very similar to the outsourcing discussion we could have had today, which is you take a number of activities, a number of processes, and you move this to another organization. You need to trust them that they can do this, but you obviously need to put in place the controls to verify that actually the job is getting done according to the design, if you will. So that trust but verify is really important, which goes back to some extent to the point I was making earlier, is that you need to document those processes, document your environment as much as you can so that you can insert those control points and you can measure how well you're doing. I think it would also be a mistake to think that if you're giving this to an organization that have done this for a long time, they have the best practices. I think they tend to have the leading practices and they've learned from experience. We all know that, but we also need to make sure that they can and they are willing to and able to leverage those best practices to service your organization. So, again, the trust but verify aspect of this is very important, and therefore control points need to be there.
So you've made a decision within your organization that you're going to offshore at least some of your IT infrastructure. What would be the steps you would take to implement that then?
So let's assume you've made that decision indeed, and let's look at the first few steps that one needs to take to actually make that happen. Obviously, we're not going to go exhaustive on this, otherwise we'd have a much longer discussion. But I think a handful of points here are important to be made. First one, I think, is really to understand the organization, be able to model it and explain it. There are models out there. Organizations tend to be somewhat, or when I'm talking about organizations, I'm talking about technology organizations, tend to be somewhat similar. Understanding the different functions is really important, and being able to articulate what they are and document them is quite important. As you go deeper into the organization, looking at the different processes, and being able to decompose those processes is going to be the next step. Once those processes are decomposed and everyone understands the cost of each piece, which is another important aspect, the organization will be in a position to decide which piece can be made offshore versus which piece needs to stay onshore. There are a number of other criteria, obviously, beyond cost, but there is a whole process there by which you can go and decide which one stays and which one goes. Once you've identified those different parts, you should really ask yourself whether or not you're going to use a captive site you might have, or you're going to out-task this to an offshore service firm. This is a decision that obviously will be driven by a number of criteria such as cost, but that's not the only one as well. You may have already a relationship with an offshore company that is managing your applications, or maintaining them rather, and therefore it makes a lot of sense for you to leverage them. This is a decision that requires a little bit of homework to decide as to what's the best way. Once you make that decision, it's really a matter of engaging the organization into this transformation. We talked about this earlier. It is a transformation. It is very people intensive, and therefore making sure that you're able to express what's in it for me type of point to the different people that are involved is going to be very important. And then I think what I want to say is that you need to plan to go slowly, and probably slower at the beginning than you might want to. But this is still something that is new, and therefore one needs to be quite realistic when the planning is done. Moving too many parts offshore in that area, which is still a bit young, a bit new, could actually be quite risky for a number of organizations. So moving piece at a time, if you will, and learning from your own experience is, I think, quite important. And then finally, like I mentioned before, as you're doing this, as you're putting this plan in place, as you're moving activities to either the captive site or the offshore service firm, keeping tight controls in place is quite important. Then start to automate a number of processes as much as you can. So this is how you're going to be able to, in the first phase, settle some operations offshore and start to build on this operation little by little.
Great. Well, thank you very much for taking some time out and speaking with us today, Frederick.
You're very welcome.